Okay, let's start.
That's my fault.
The new material that we dealt with a week ago was under number 6 in the on the outline on psyche and spirit, or psyche and intentionality, if you want to take the more operative, less metaphysically committed statement of what I'm trying to get at. In terms of experience, we can talk of psyche and intentionality. And under A, integrator and operator, I talked simply about the way, well, I don't know if I talked simply, but I talked about the way in which the self, the total self, both integrates the experiences involved in one's previous development and operates further development through the meeting of new experiences, new challenges, the raising of further questions. The self is at work, continually at work, to integrate our experience up to this point and to operate the development of the person beyond the point which he or she has reached at any given moment in one's life. I think one of the profoundest evidences that I have seen of that, precisely that point, is a book which I may have mentioned in here before. I'm not sure whether I did or not. It's called The Far Side of Madness. Written by John Weir, W-E-I-R, Perry. A Jungian analyst operating in San Francisco who has worked with schizophrenic patients for years claims to have a higher rate of success in dealing with schizophrenics than is normal. At any rate, whether that's true or not, what Perry shows, I think, with a certain amount of clarity is the way in which the fantasies of the schizophrenics, which we tend to dismiss as pure rubbish, as simply being crazy, how those fantasies are attempts on the part of the psyche of the schizophrenic to achieve integration of his or her experience and to move their development back to health. Fantasies are actually frantic, reaching out for a restoration to health. And Perry's whole point is that if you treat the fantasies that way and respect them as attempts on the part of the self at integration and operation, you will have more success in dealing with schizophrenics than if you dismiss their fantasies as being nothing but nonsense. R.D. Lang makes a similar point in his treatment of schizophrenics. Schizophrenia, and so does Thomas Sazz, S-Z-A-S-Z. He's written one of the most stinging critiques of psychotherapy, the psychotherapeutic profession. Okay. At any rate, that's the point that I was making there under A. Under B, on psychology of passional motivations, I was discussing the need to make the distinction between states of affectivity and operations of intentionality, a distinction between affectivity and the operations of intentionality. The two are not separate in our experience, but they need to be discussed distinctly. And psychologies that do not make that distinction clearly run the danger of reducing consciousness to sensitive psychological states. Consciousness becomes sensitive consciousness. And then they create a dual image of the human person in which we are body and psyche. The human person is collapsed into a duality of body and sensitive psyche. And then the psychology that they would develop would be what Eric Frugelin has called the psychology of passional motivations, where all of conscious experience is interpreted in such categories as stimulus response, association, and so on and so forth. That is to say, categories that do obtain with regard to the sensitive psyche, but that are not adequate for dealing with the totality of human consciousness. These are good categories to use for certain psychic realities, psychic experiences, but they do not, they will not give you an adequate understanding of the whole of consciousness. And then under C, psychology of orientations. I take that expression also from Vogelin and am indicating that a psychology of orientations would recognize the connection of the psyche to the body. It's not denying that at all. It recognizes it fully. But it also indicates that the experiences of the psyche, the affective experiences that we are in contact with, express also the participation of the psyche in the quest of human intentionality for intelligibility, for truth, and for the good, and ultimately for the divine. And so the psyche is recognized then as sharing in and participating in the rhythms and processes of the body. The clearest example of that is that when something is wrong with the rhythms and processes of the body, you experience it psychically. You have a headache. Sensitive consciousness is participating in the rhythms and processes of the body. But the psyche experiences also its participation in the drive of intentionality for intelligible relationships, for true judgments, and for responsible decisions, and for union with God. From a theological point of view, I would maintain that as a theologian. And so, in my framework, the person's psyche is healed to the extent that the person is able to live in the balance of body and intentionality without displacing that balance too much in either direction. But to live affectively in the balance of body and intentionality, or in the balance, to take the terms from Lonergan that I will be using for the rest of the course, in the balance of limitation and transcendence. And here, transcendence means simply going beyond. It doesn't refer necessarily to transcendence in the sense just of relationship to God. It's not the way Lonergan's using the term in this instance, but simply the creative vector that moves beyond where we are right now, transcending where we are right now. To live in the balance of limitation and transcendence without displacing that balance in either direction. To live in that taut balance of limitation and transcendence. Those of you who are taking any courses from Tad Dunn have certainly run into the expression that Eric Vogelin uses of the metaxy, the Greek expression for the in-between. And how the authenticity of human experience, of human psychic experience, is to be able to live in the in-between without displacing the experience of the in-between too much in one direction or another. These notions of limitation and transcendence, just to make some connections that some of you may have experience of through Tad's lectures, is very much related to, I'm not saying it's identical to what Vogelin calls the limitaxy, but it certainly is related to it. You'd have to do much more extensive comparison of the texts of Lonergan and Vogelin to get at the exact correspondence, but it's getting at the same sort of thing. So to live in the in-between of limitation and transcendence without the displacement in one direction or the other is the key to psychic health. To, and when the psyche is living in the in-between, it is integrating and operating. It is experiencing the integration of previous development, and so it's continually bringing itself to a higher integration of previous experience, and it is contributing to the operation of further development. It's living in that tension between operation and integration. And by tension, I'm not referring to, you know, nervous tension. I'm referring to the taut balance of living in the in-between and limitation. Right. And that gets us into D, because what I was trying to propose is that the human person is a triple compound of body, sensitive psyche, and spiritual intentionality, and not a dual compound of psyche and body. Okay. What's the place of the psyche in this structure, then? The place of the psyche is, in terms of our experience, the psyche feels its participation in the rhythms of the body and in the demands of intentionality. It feels its participation in both of those limits, in what Jung calls matter and spirit. The psyche is the in-between of matter and spirit in the human person. This is very Jungian as well as Lonerganian. Jung's paper on the nature of the psyche written in 1946, so one of the most mature works, and published in volume 8 of the collected works of Jung on the nature of the psyche, makes the same point with regard to the place of the psyche in the constitution of the human person. The psyche is the in-between of matter and spirit, and it participates in both. And psychic energy is that participation in the rhythms of human psychic energy. It is that participation in the rhythms of the body and the quest of the spirit. Now, Jung does not have as fully worked out a notion of intentionality as what I've been trying to present with the creative vector, but he has a notion of the movement beyond, transcendence, if you want, which he calls spirit. And the psyche is the in-between. It feels its existence in the in-between of the body and intentionality. Okay. So, and then the health, to repeat once again, the health of the psyche is to be able to live in that balance, to live in the in-between, poised in equilibrium between body and spirit, limitation and transcendence. Poised. The notion of a poised psyche. In the balance. To displace psychic equilibrium in either direction. And notice what I'm meaning by psychic equilibrium. I'm not talking about a pure state of what in some psychologists called homeostasis, where the whole, again, integration is taken as the goal. The psychic health is not just integration. It is living in the balance of integration and operation. That's what I mean by equilibrium, in that balance between integration and operation. But anyway, to displace that equilibrium in either direction is psychic dis-ease, disease. Displacement in either direction. I want to talk a little bit more about the displacements. This is still by way of repeating what I took last week, but I'd like to say a little bit more about them. To displace psychic energy in the direction of limitation, as I indicated in the last class, invites a state of psychotic depression in the extreme, on the extreme end of the continuum of limitation and transcendence. No spatial imagery is completely helpful here, but I will use the imagery of the continuum of psychic energy, with the notion of the balance, the equilibrium, living in the balance of limitation and transcendence. All right, to displace that balance in this direction leads in the extreme to the condition of depression, where one's existential stance with regard to oneself is something approximating I am nothing. I have no possibility. Jean-Paul Sartre's expression, there is no exit. There's no way out. And to displace in the direction of transcendence invites in the extreme the condition of schizophrenia, where the existential stance is something approximating I am everything. I'm a lot more than what I really am. I'm Napoleon, or I am the Messiah, or Jimmy Jones, I am God. The inflation too much possibility one assumes too much possibility One, as Ernest Becker puts it, takes in the whole world and chews it all over as a problem and thinks you've got to solve the whole blessed thing. In the dream that of my friend that I related to you last week, I'd like to go into that symbolism of that dream a little bit more. See, the person is driving down a dark country road at night, and it's totally pitch black except for the lights that are projected by the car that he's driving. Now, that is, in fact, an accurate representation of the theoretical work that that person is doing. He is exploring new territory in the area of the relationship of religion and society, religion and politics, political theologies. It's an accurate expression of the existential life of the individual. Okay. He suffers the heart attack, is taken to the hospital, and when he realizes that he's in the emergency room of the hospital, he starts talking about this. That's where the problem comes in. Not the work that he's doing, but his relationship to the work. The relationship to the work is that you're taking in the whole thing and trying to chew it out, chew it over, and get the solution to it without taking into account the limitations that are placed upon what your possibilities are. See, the rhythms and processes of your own body place a limitation on what you can do. And be content with taking one problem at a time. And moving question after question. But not to the point where you are inviting a rootless condition, which is what schizophrenia is. When one's lost one's root in the body, and then you start building, after a while, a world that doesn't exist. Okay, but anyway, the I am everything is the existential stance that's over on this end. And here, I am this. I am just this, but by God, I am this. That, and knowing what the this is who I am, living in that balance of limitation and transcendence. I am not nothing, I am not everything. I'm this person with this past and these possibilities. I'm not caught in a world where I have no possibilities, I'm not caught in a world where everything is possible, but I create the balance between the possibilities that are given and the projects that I construct.
Is there, towards health though, is there a kind of a point going toward intentionality though, instead of going beyond our limits?
Yeah, that's the tendency towards transcendence, you see.
Okay. All right.
See, this is why the diagram is maybe it's a point like this, huh? Might help. To be in the in-between of those two vectors, those two arrows. Yes, definitely. Moving beyond. But, rooted in. Or Philip Reeve, in his discussion of character, describes character as the restrictive shaping of possibility. Restrictive shaping of your own possibilities. You do shape your possibilities, you see, and you follow through on them, but you restrict. It's a restrictive shaping. And the restrictions are the instructions imposed by the limitations of life in the body, and life not only in the body, but in the society, the culture, and so on. One of the things that's going to be most important, I think, as humanity moves into its own future, is cross-cultural communication and adaptation and mutual enrichment of people across cultures and so on. There's a tremendous danger connected with that, you see, of trying to jump too quickly into the possibilities offered by another culture. Anyone who moves into cross-cultural work and actual movement into another culture has very much got to keep in mind that it's a restrictive shaping of possibilities. You've got to be very, very careful with the second nature that has already been developed in you through your own culture. You see? And to violate that too quickly and too sharply is to invite a breakdown of that balance. Is that a good example or a helpful example? I think most of us may have experience of how difficult it is to move into another culture in these ways, and it is difficult. That doesn't mean you don't do it, but you do it as you can, and you do it in a way where you allow yourself the time and the space that is needed for the adaptation, because there's a whole set of habits that has to undergo a transformation to take on another culture's ways of doing it.
To speak to your original point and to talk about the balance, the tension, where you're not exactly sitting on the middle point, but perhaps finding a rhythm for oscillation between them and the transcendence, just jumped into my mind would be, like that homeostatic image would be something like needle point. You take one half of a stitch, and if you take off and never come back to the cloth and go through it to the backside, you may be having a lot of fun on either side of the cloth, but you're never going to put a pattern together.
You're not going to get anything together.
Just a question of these elements that we're speaking of, the psyche, the spirit, the body, we say are components of the self. I'm just wondering what unifies those three components into a self. Is a self a fourth creature, which is just kind of, we're not focusing on it as such yet, but we will.
You're asking a metaphysical question at that point, which I will say that the unifying thing is the intentionality. That's what is the unifying factor or principle, which I would hold in the Aristotelian Thomist tradition as the spiritual principle that they have called the soul. That whose effects in our experience are the unrestricted quest of human intentionality, and that is the unifying principle or the form that unifies and makes the being one.
We recognize it in its effects, in the fact that we are striving, we are searching for meaning in life.
Yeah. Now, John, the question is really good. I was reflecting on this as I was preparing the notes today. To write a foundations of psychology, you're going to have to incorporate a metaphysics into that. Metaphysics. I can't go into that here because of the other material that I want to do. But at the same time, I want you to know where I'm coming from, and that is, yes, the unifying principle is this.
Would those unifying principles, like with Ron and Jung, like self,
are those the ranks of the will to toward immortality? Would those be the unifying principles for them?
Certainly for Rock, it is the will to immortality, yeah. The Jung is the self, but metaphysically, which dimension of the self, which of the three? I think he probably would lean towards the psyche as being the unifying principle of the self. I don't think he ever discusses it precisely those terms. I think the unity is experienced in the psyche. Whether we're integrated or disintegrated, the experience is a psychic experience. You know, it's the experience of unification or splitness. But I think ontologically what constitutes the unity of the person is a spiritual dimension.
Okay.
The creative vector as it moves by question to understanding, to true understanding, and to decision, and as it reaches out for the other.